Tanta Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Storytellers by Karen McKinley, narrated by Olivia Thompson. Chapter 1. Ronnie, Liverpool. Singles night. When conjoined, there can't be two more desperate words, unless they're speed and dating. It's busy. Plenty of people dressed up in their peacock finery, searching for connections. Hip-hop tunes blare through mists of discomfort. How will the lonely voices converse tonight? I'll need a few drinks to get through this. At least they only have 10 minutes each. I sip my pina colada and glance over at Mr. Nobody Number One. The bar is sophisticated, dark, and just the right side of expensive. His Primark sweater in bright purple is not. I promised myself an end to this. I never learn. Another sip of my drink, and Mr. Nobody edges his chair that little bit closer. His breath reeks of beer. He better watch out. I bite. He tells me how frustrated he is. He's always horny, but can't get it up. His girlfriend left him. She cheated. It affected his confidence. I call him on his bullshit. He's not practicing a hard-on with me. At 40, I've heard every line. As he bumbles an apology, I'm already thinking of chicken fried rice and getting home in time for casualty. Slouching back in my seat, I take a deep breath in preparation for Mr. Nobody Number Two. He has thick lime braces that hold up plaid pantaloons. You can't call them trousers. These are billowing breeches, all tied up with an 80s lilac belt. His long knotted beard is speckled with dregs of the salted nuts he's piling into his mouth. And as he talks, specks of brittle and half-eaten shells spurt out. They scatter around us. I try to be polite. Sincerely, I do. I pluck a pink umbrella from my drink and drain the glass. As he drones on about his model train collection in intricate detail, I crack and crunch ice with my teeth. Then he produces a small gold case and retrieves a toothpick from it. It's sad, but I'm out. You'd think as you get older, it would be easier to find the one, but it's not. Only the dregs are left. The dumped. The unwanted. Men who have been deemed unworthy by the rest of womankind. They should wear warnings slapped across their head. Cheater. Liar. Married. Peter Pan. A buzzer rings behind me, and a woman sheathed in pink shrills, "Time's up! Move on!" But that's the problem. I've been moving on for so very long. Drinks are lifted, chairs pushed back. A man to the left of me dawdles, drains the last from a whiskey tumbler, and looks to his left and right, weighing up his chances. In shoes too high for her, Miss Pink strides forward and ushers him on. Escaping towards the light of a neon exit, my heel catches in sticky carpet. And as if in slow motion, I begin to topple, until a stranger engulfs me into his arms and breaks my fall. I gasp and shrug him off. But he pulls me into a dark, quiet corner and pushes me firmly against a wall. He's wearing tight black jeans and a cream polo. Taller than me, broad-shouldered, his eyes emerald green. How have I not seen him before? He's gorgeous. He sweeps my hair over my back and traces a finger down my neckline. Tendrils of vanilla scent drift towards me. Potent. Compelling. I want to taste him. "Beautiful pearls," he whispers. My breathing grows faster, and a flush warms my skin. He smiles, leans in and brushes his lips against mine. I've no idea why I'm allowing this to happen. Perhaps it's the drink and the model train engines. His grip on my hair tightens, and his breath grazes my skin. Tell me you want it, he says. I do. I really do. But not like this. I'm nobody's bitch. Who does he think he is? I push him away. He falters, throws his arms wide, then does a mock bow. It's like he's playing the part of the gallant hero in some costume drama from the BBC. A hand is held out in greeting, and his eyes flicker with challenge. I'm Graham. Pleased to meet you. Yeah, I bet you are. The question is, am I pleased to meet you? Perhaps not yet, but you will be. He winks. I shove past his audacity, strut into the night and walk towards the taxi queue. My hands find their way to my teeth, and red varnish chips from my fingernails to colour the night. The arrogance, the confidence, those emerald eyes. Should I be pleased to meet him? Chapter 2. Nicky, Blackpool. Stumbling past the greasy cafe, an empty table screams, "Leave the diet one more day." I'm easily persuaded. I mean, who actually likes starving themselves? Plus, a raging hangover is such a good excuse to eat. So why not? Plastering on a smile, I approach the counter. The smell of bacon crisps the air, and my mouth waters at the thought of a sandwich with lashings of butter and brown sauce. Maybe even some grated cheese sprinkled on top. But probably plain toast or a fruit salad would be the best choice. So boring, though. The woman behind the counter rubs the back of her neck. Then she picks up a pen and small notepad and stares. Under pressure, I order my usual breakfast of a fried egg roll and a Coke, then flee for the corner booth. You can hide there. Maybe that's why last night's dirty pig never said goodbye. Maybe Mike was too embarrassed to be seen with me in daylight. Someone bigger than a skinny size 10. Or maybe he had a girlfriend waiting at home. Screw him. Oh wait, already done that. A fit of giggle swamps me. But then a sudden tear makes me feel so alone. Blackpool's great for meeting people. Everyone's on holiday and looking for fun. But I want something more than a one-night stand. Maybe it's time to go home. A deep cough interrupts my thoughts. Someone's standing at my table. There are plenty of empty places. Why choose mine? I gaze up through my lashes to tell them just that. But my stare meets the most gorgeous brown eyes, and my voice kind of goes. He's about 30, 12 years older than me. But who cares? He's dead handsome. A small white plate is balanced in front of me.
Ciao, miss. I bring you the egg roll.
With a flourish, he sets it down and waits expectantly. What's he waiting for? It's an egg roll, and he's acting like we're in a 5-star restaurant instead of a cheap, greasy cafe. My manners return, and I mutter thanks and lower my head, hoping he'll go away. But he still stands there waiting, watching. The bloody weirdo. What's supposed to happen now? I'm not going to pick it up and start in front of him. You can never eat a fried egg roll without the yolk dripping down your chin and onto your clothes, no matter which way you bite into it. It's worse if you put ketchup on. You never know what end is going to squirt out then.
You will enjoy the egg, yes?
Oh my good God. What is it with him and eggs? Suddenly, he picks up my plate and holds it up near my face. I jump back in my chair.
Why not you eat the roll I make?
It's like getting a telling off from a dad. What's wrong with this guy? Does he have some kind of egg fetish? I should have ordered the fruit. And then he opens the roll and lifts out the egg. It's fresh. Straight out of the box, like you'd buy them from the shop. He holds it up between his finger and thumb.
See, I don't cook. The egg, it's raw. It's funny, no?
I turn towards the woman at the counter. She's fanning herself with a screwed-up newspaper and blowing kisses towards us. They're all mad in here. He looks down at me, and a smile lifts his tone.
Maybe it's no funny. I see beautiful girl, but she sad. I think, how can I do the cheaty chat? How they say, cut the ice.
He shakes his head. But it's no work. My head fizzles with a burst of excitement, and I giggle, finally getting the point of being egg-stalked. He howls with laughter, slamming his hands against his thighs, like it's the funniest thing in the world. It isn't. But it's cute, I guess.
I am the Giovanni,
he says, and I kind of melt. Well, you would too at his accent and swoony good looks. Chapter 3. Ronnie, Liverpool. I threw off my black satin duvet, hurl myself from the bed, and race shivering into the shower. The scent of vanilla musk froths and drifts into the air. Its aroma reminds me of Graham, and my thoughts float back on a soapy bubble to two nights before. There had been something about him, something heady, intoxicating. My defences hadn't been down for such a long time, but he'd entranced me that night. And as I lather my arms, his touch is still there. There were a lot of losers there that night, including myself. But he was different. What would have happened if I'd shaken his hand? Where might we have ended? A shiver tingles through me. There's only one way to find out. I'll drag myself back to the singles club. He might be there, and we'll see what happens. But this time, I'll be the one taking the lead. In the meantime, I must get to school. Thick clusters of girls with skirts hiked high above their knees shriek in the school playground. The usual group of boys gather close by. Thank goodness they're all in uniform. Girls, skirts, please.
Yes, miss,
comes the automatic reply. They'll have hitched them back up their legs by the time I reach my office. It's our little game of Groundhog Day. The film, not the myth. Brian, my deputy, struts towards me in a brand new suit that's just a tad too bright. What new shadow will he cast my way? He compounds his usual insincerity by flashing a cold smile. Morning, miss. Going to be a tough one today.
We'll be fine, Brian. We'll show them we're brilliant.
He snorts loudly and hammers in his last nail. Yeah, true, true. But if the inspection fails, you'll lose your job and we'll need a new head teacher. That'd be such a shame after all your hard work. He'd love nothing more. His creeping to the governor's has already shown how much he'd love to replace me. Won't come to that, Brian. They'll see how great we are. I really pray I'm correct and turn to inspect the hall. The literacy notice board outside the English department has three mistakes. Fuck. Ripping it down, I turn back to Brian and say, there are spelling mistakes on here. You were meant to check all the notice boards. Get it changed right away, please. I'm off to the Year 10 assembly. I've no more time for his shit today. The hall in sunshine yellow has inspirational quotes papering its high walls. No one ever pays them the slightest attention, but I live in hope. Exams are fast approaching. They need to take them seriously, ignore the idle gossip that rules their lives, and focus on what really matters. After 15 minutes of statistics and the importance of being kind, the children fidget in their seats. It's time to let them go. So, good luck. Let's show these inspectors today how proud we are of our school. Enjoy your lessons, and let's leave quietly by the first row. They file out, trying to hide a buzz of conversation. Hannah, the receptionist, in her fake Chanel suit, totters on high heels as she weaves her way through them. By the urgency of her tight lips, this is it. I stand still and inhale deeply. The school inspectors have arrived and apologised for being late. They seem nice. I've put them in your office with a cup of tea. Yeah, they always seem nice. Outside my office door, I pause and smooth my hands down the creases in my suit. I fuss with the buttons on my cream blouse and run fingers through my hair. Fuck this fear. I've worked years for this moment. Finally, I'll be proven right. I'm more than ready for this. Pushing the door open, I greet the men who will decide my fate. Good morning. I'm Ronnie Stevens, the head teacher. Welcome to our school. Good morning. Sorry about missing assembly. The traffic was awful, even though we stayed nearby last night. I'm Andrew, Chief Inspector, and this is my colleague. I blink once, twice, my hands tense by my side. Nothing I do can change who he is. I'm Graham. Pleased to meet you, he says. What the fuck is going on? Brian, the weasel, bumbles in, and his desperation to be seen knocks me forward into Graham's upturned grin. I spring back. My fingers clutch the black pearls on my necklace, my mother's, my usual comfort. But Graham stares, and the ghost of his voice uttering beautiful pearls whispers through the air. I turn my hand back to my side. He winks. Get your fucking act together, Ronnie. He's just a man. So what if he's had his hand up your thighs? Above the waist, I'm all head teacher. But below, I'm a quivering mess. The stairway doors bang open, and Mr. Young, a science teacher, bounds through. As usual, he's flustered, and his big face is rosy red from climbing the stairs. I hush him with a glare, and reluctantly ask Brian to take the inspectors to their first observations. I hate letting go of the reins, but it will give me time to clear my head and give myself a shake. When Graham cheekily pokes his tongue out as he leaves, I'm appalled. Turning to Mr. Young, I ask him, "What's wrong?"
"Miss, come quick. Two boys have jumped out the classroom window, and I've no idea where they've gone."
"Tell reception to phone and inform their parents. I'm on my way. And sir, don't ever leave your classroom, especially not when the inspectors are in." I storm off towards the playground, furious with the boys, but even angrier at myself. How can I let this affect me so much? And the way Graham is reveling in my anxiety is infuriating. But it's my fault. I know better than to shit on my own doorstep. The boys are hiding behind a dirty yellow skip, snatching sneaky cigarettes before lessons. Another three have joined them, and when I shout, "Boys!" they jump in unison. They need to get a better look out. I confiscate the cigarettes. They're my brand and might come in handy later. I give the boys a stern warning, the usual detentions, and send them on their way. Then I stride off to the staff room, hunting for chocolate. At the end of the school day, the inspectors sit down with their official folders and regulation facade. Brian edges his chair away from me and smiles towards them. The rat. Hannah has just served tea and Kit Kats. I'm too nervous to even think about taking a break. What have they found? Have we done well? And will Graham stop with his deep, meaningful stares? The chief inspector tugs at the cuffs of his tweed jacket and begins, "Thank you for allowing us to see the school. For fuck's sake, get on with it. I'll start by stating that we agreed if we had children, we'd be happy for them to attend here." The relief flows over me, and I deflate into the orange plastic chair. Brian's smile slips from his face, and patches of damp spread under his arms. So much for his lynx effect. "I'm committed to giving children a second chance, and your school does this," the chief inspector says. Under the table, Graham's foot rubs against mine. The shock makes me kick him. I sit up straight and throw him a furious glare. How dare he? This is a professional meeting. If people find out, we'll be fired. Yet, my pulse is racing. His daring lights something inside me. I glance sideways to check Brian the rat hasn't seen. He'd bloody orgasm at such a find. Graham begins his feedback, as though nothing has happened.
I'll be taking your behaviour model to the local authority as an example of excellence.
He believes in the same things I do, and he thinks my way is the best. I grip my pen to hide my pleasure. He gives another smile, but I suppress mine. I'll not show this fucker a single flicker of emotion. After a while, the chief inspector leaves to observe the after-school drama club, and I tell Brian to accompany him. As I stand, Graham loiters at the door, his dark eyes searching the length of my body, exploring my face. I try to quench my climbing excitement and reach for a bottle of water. When I bring it to my lips and swallow, he licks his lips. I really shouldn't. It's high risk. But my feet edge over to the corner of the room. Come closer. I command. His eyes smoulder and his mouth breaks into a lazy grin. It's time for me to take control, regain some balance of the situation. Fastening my hand around the curls of his hair, I pull his lips to mine and grab the firm flesh of his arse. In response, his hand rises under my skirt, but I slap it away. No. Gripping his hair tighter, I draw his head down. I can also do deep stares. Tilting my mouth to his lips for one more taste, my body leans in for more. But I remember where we are, smack his ass, and push him through the door. Later, Graham. He laughs and almost dances, his eyes sparking with the game.
You're stunning, Ronnie. Let me take you out for dinner.
I hesitate. I would love nothing more, but the school comes first. Not until after the final report. Before he turns the corner, he winks.
Till we meet again. Gorgeous.
And with a quick wiggle of his bum, he strolls away. Laughing, I close the door, collapse onto the carpet, and throw my head back in laughter. What a day! I thrust a fist into the air. We've passed. We've done it. And after years of searching, maybe Graham is the one. A mist gathers at my feet, pungent, salty like the scent of the ocean. And it's rising, snaking under the door, searching for me. A scream echoes within the room, and I realise it's me.
It's time,
someone says, and I splash into the sea. The waves call me anew. I stand and face them. How many times have I done this now? The singles night, the school, Graham. But the waves, with their same old recollection, draw me in, welcoming me home. I'd forgotten this part. I always do. Chapter 4. Nicky, Blackpool. In the shop, with its sexy sheer sleeves, the new black dress was so classy, the sort of dress Giovanni would love. I wriggle and squeeze myself into it and turn, expecting the reflection of Marilyn Monroe. But the mirror shouts, "You look 6 months pregnant." The memory of last night's cheeseburger fills me with disgust. The dress is so clingy, even my moles are mountains. I rip it off. Little drops of sweat drip from my nose, and my last hope, the pink glitter sheath, peeks from my bag. Now, pink is my colour. Everyone says so, including my mum. A princess colour, all girly and full of sugary flirts, just like me. I pull it on and throw a wink at the mirror. This is me and all my sexy glances. And this is me, hand on hip, standing seductively at the bar. The dress gives my boobs such a nice round shape, all perky and full, and my ass is fabulous. He'll love it. Swigging a last slug of lager, I grab my handbag. I'm so excited for our first real date. Blowing a goodbye pout to the mirror, I open the front door and pause. Will he introduce me as his girlfriend? How grown up would that be? He isn't here yet. It's 8 p.m. and the restaurant is buzzing. People are chatting, sharing pizza, and the waiters are walking around with drinks and orders. The place is dark, with red walls and candles burning on checked tables. The rich odour of garlic blasts the air, and the heat of baked bread wraps around me. Where the hell is he? Inside the entrance, I wait, biting my nails. This is our first public date, and it's so fancy. A swig of vodka would help, but I better not. Don't want to look like an alcoholic. I'll wait until I go to the loo later, then fish it out of my handbag. I smooth down my dress and suck in my tummy. I hope when he sees me, he'll think I'm beautiful. The room explodes into a blast of noise. Startled, I edge back into the wall. A bunch of Italians trying to outstage each other is so loud.
Ciao, come stai, Giovanni?
The waiters all call. He swaggers through the restaurant like a movie star attending a red carpet premiere. All lights are on him. Staff clamber to greet him, to pat him on the back. Even the customers turn to bask in his presence. He's beautiful. That's not a word you'd use for a guy, but it fits him perfectly. It isn't just his hair, his eyes, his golden skin, or the tiny little dimples that crinkle near his mouth when he smiles. It's his dazzle. A tiny blonde smothered in foundation and squeezed into a pink miniskirt totters towards him, a glass of red wine in her hand. Who's she? Pink is my colour, not hers. He grabs her around the waist and kisses both cheeks of her perfect little face. She giggles and offers him the wine. I hope she topples over on her stupid bloody heels and falls face down into a plate of bolognese. Giovanni ambles through the restaurant and stops at a table to ask the diners how their food is. My eyes widen when he grabs a spare spoon and helps himself to the man's dinner. But the man laughs.
It's not as good as yours, Gio.
Giovanni helps himself to some more. The man looks up, a wide smile on his face, and Giovanni confirms,
the food, it is good here, yes? The choice you make, very good. But it needs more of the salt.
The man stands and they hug, patting each other's backs. Giovanni turns his gaze to the other diner, probably the man's wife. She quickly covers her plate with her hands, and a burst of laughter escapes from my lips. I would do the same. Music blasts the room, and from the kitchen, a couple of waiters carry a fancy birthday cake to one of the tables. The room becomes silent, and everyone turns round. I take the opportunity to edge away from the wall.
Bella! Bella Nikki! What you doing? Why you be hiding?
Giovanni strides towards me and gathers me up like a feather in his arms. Kissing me softly on the lips, he escorts me to a table in the back. It's so sweet when he pulls out a chair for me. No other boyfriend has done that before. Well, I guess they couldn't. The seats are glued down at fast food places.
You beautiful, my bella Nikki.
He lifts my hand to his lips, and my head swirls with what must be romance. His mouth sends hot sparks against my skin, and when he strokes my fingers, I want to rip his bloody clothes off. But he stands.
I go now. You stay here and me be back soon.
He kisses the top of my head and ruffles my hair, and I sigh in annoyance.
We've just sat down. The smile drops from my face. Why isn't he calling a waiter over? Some romantic dinner date this is turning out to be. In a sulk and grabbing my vodka, I jump up and strut to the loo. My friend, Susie, thinks he's too old for me, but all the guys before him are like little boys. Giovanni is a real man. Tall, broad, and confident. His size makes me feel all protected and safe, like my father used to do, once upon a time. But not if he's going to leave me all alone, like my father did too. Practicing a pout in the mirror, a thought crosses my mind. Maybe he's talking to that blonde bitch. Maybe she's batting her fake eyelashes at him. Men can't be trusted when it's thrown on a plate for them. Taking a quick gulp of vodka, I stomp back. I'll rip her pretty dyed hair out. He's in the galley kitchen and calls me over. A waiter offers me a stool to watch him cook. I sit down with my head propped up on my fist and glare at him. My feet kick against the stool. This isn't how it's meant to be. Over a hot stove, Giovanni tosses herbs, spaghetti and butter together. His eyes are intent on his creation, his lips humming a soft tune. The scents of basil and melted butter waft along the heated air, and my hunger rumbles. As he grates parmesan over the dish, he looks up with eyes that glisten. "For me, Nicky, the food, it is the love. My mama, always she give us lots of food. The more food she give, the more she love you too much. The food you eat tonight, it has to come from my hands." My pulse races, and a giggle of bliss runs through me. Smiling, I sit up straight. Maybe this is the right way after all. I was so wrong to doubt him. Has Giovanni burnt something? Because there's a mist wrapping around me, and its damp breath makes me cough and splutter. I try to disperse it with my hands, but it's growing thicker. It trails up my nose, invades my mouth, and I sneeze and sneeze. I've no idea where it's come from or why it's after me. I stumble down from the bar stool, but my feet lift off the floor, and I float into the air with my dress spread out all around me. I cling to a ceiling light and shout, "Help!" But no one answers. Why can't they see me? Am I dead? An angel fluttering above them? I'm glad I wore pink. The mist has no answers, and it drags me higher and higher. At first, I've no idea where I am. But the sea appears. And yes, I've been here before. I plunge into the water. Then, as always, I rise to a custard yellow sun, my feet stuck in wet sand. Waves crash towards me, hypnotic, seductive, pulling me back. But before their memory grasps me, before I enter the greasy cafe, a woman further down the sand appears. She too stares out over the water, as if in a trance. A man watches us both. Chapter 5. Mrs. Hawthorne, the beach. Ocean waves lap against my ankles, and the chill startles me into a sharp breath. Where am I? Sands stretch into the distance, adding a sense of bleakness to the place. Gulping salt-tinged air, I close my eyes tightly, try to focus, but there's nothing solid to hold on to. Everything keeps shifting. My feet sink deeper into soggy sand. Waves unfurl on the shore, their hypnotic rhythm filling the air. To the left of me, they lap at the ankle of a young woman standing just like me. On the other side, the silhouette of another woman cuts against the blinding sun, but as each wave hisses its retreat, something is changing. My most precious memories are fading. Smiling faces flicker in and out, young and old. Children playing hopscotch,
A woman brushing a young girl's hair, a baby crying. In desperation, I clutch at the air, fingertips tracing the past, but the memories slip from my grasp and continue to fade. Tears roll down my cheeks with the effort of holding on. A child with a red kite, his smile wide. My hands reach out to touch the string, but it's too late. It's gone. Seasoned with the salt of sea spray, my loss sharpens. There's no fight left in me. Wringing my papery hands, I step out of the surf towards the lure of a distant shack. As though my movements have broken their reveries, the other two women follow behind. The younger is barefoot and wearing a pink party frock. Her blonde hair tumbles down onto her shoulders. The older one is about 40, brunette, and is dressed in a smart trouser suit. The heels of her shoes sink into the sand as she walks. As they get closer, their wide eyes tell me they're as lost as me. I don't speak, for fear I won't know my own voice. We meet before the shack, a cafe with driftwood walls that could have grown out of the sea itself. A rough, uneven counter runs along its length. There are three bright yellow bar stools, but none of us sit. I suspect they're as frightened as me. But then, the lady in the trouser suit barges towards me.
"I'm Ronnie. Who the fuck are you? And how did I get here?"
Her sharp words startle me, and I stumble backwards in the sand. But my fall is broken by the young girl's arms. As she helps me regain my footing, she asks me if I'm okay. Then she turns to Ronnie and says,
"What did you do that for? She's an old woman."
Ronnie scowls.
"And who are you? Are you both in this together?"
I stare blankly at Ronnie. What does she mean? The young girl strokes my arm as if that will calm me and responds,
"I'm Nikki." "What's going on?"
Ronnie asks her.
"How did I get here?"
Nikki shakes her head.
"I don't know. I don't know how I got here either."
They both turn to me and glare, but I've no explanation to offer. I simply don't care. Ronnie lifts a hand to her head, rubs her face.
"The last thing I remember was our school inspection. I was on a date,"
Nikki says.
"It was lovely or romantic, but it's fading. And I can't remember who it was with anymore."
She looks around the beach, at the bar stools, and then out towards the sea.
"But the waves! I remember the waves!"
She twists a strand of hair in her fingers, tugging at it, distracted.
"And I've seen you before, Ronnie. You stand on the shore staring out at the sea, but I don't know how I know that."
A tear slips from her eye. It glistens and shimmers down her face.
"Do you think it's a dream?"
Ronnie tears off her jacket and throws it to the sand. The grains flutter up and sparkle in the sunlight.
"If this is a dream, you couldn't both be here. I wouldn't be dreaming and talking to people I don't know."
She pinches her skin and slaps her arms.
"See? That hurts. It wouldn't happen in a dream."
Her voice becomes a whisper. "But I think I've seen you before, Nikki, too." How can they know and not know each other? It doesn't make sense. Someone is lying. Probably the someone who brought us all here. If I cared what happens to me, I'd figure out who. From the back of the shack, an aged man shuffles and stands behind the counter. He's dressed formally in a bartender's crisp shirt, black suit,
and polished brogues. His long tangled hair is tied back casually from his face and appears at odds with his attire. He smiles, although the smile never catches his eyes. It seems painted on.
Greetings. I'm the gatekeeper. I guide those who seek to move beyond this place.
Nikki's face echoes my own bewilderment and dread. Who is this man? But Ronnie's hands clench into a fist.
Oh, I might have known. Stand back, ladies. Here comes the cavalry to mansplain,
she says. Nikki giggles and Ronnie bares her teeth. The gatekeeper smiles. Such impoliteness, especially towards one who can answer your queries. His eyes narrow towards Ronnie and Nikki.
Didn't you just ask why you're here? Wouldn't you like to know?
Spit it out then, old man,
Ronnie says. He frowns at her.
You should learn to keep a civil tongue in your head. Until then, you deserve only the unvarnished truth. You're both dead.
Ronnie kicks the sand.
Dead? You're mad? Look at me. I'm right fucking here.
Nikki reaches out to Ronnie, as though she wants to hold her hand.
This isn't right. We can't be dead in all this light.
And how did you both get here?
He says, tone calm, eyes burning stronger than the sun. Ronnie's head twists left to right, as if searching for an answer.
Well, if it's not a dream, we must have been passengers on a cruise. It sank, and we're its only survivors.
The gatekeeper shakes his head and takes a step towards her. She backs away.
Oh, you kidnapped us all, you dirty bastard!
The gatekeeper's eyes cloak in scarlet. His pupils dilate. The sky darkens. I flinch in confusion, and a dark dread slashes, slices, and cuts through the air. Ronnie stands still, her limbs trembling. Nikki grabs her hand and drags her towards me. We crouch down and huddle together in the sand that circles around us. But I'm not afraid. I've just let them shape me. When Nikki talks, it's in the softest of whispers.
Is it a dream then?
Does it feel like a dream?
He says.
Is this heat a dream? Is the sand beneath you a dream?
I pick some of it up, and as I let it drop between my fingers, its coarse texture grazes my skin. This is no dream. He points a long finger at Ronnie and Nikki.
You both died a long time ago, but you're stuck here, on this beach, in limbo, replaying the same scene from your life over and over. Why do you think you are drawn back to the waves, time after time after time?
Ronnie's head shoots up, and she unfurls her legs, but Nikki hushes her and pulls her back down.
Beyond here is the afterlife, a place of beauty and peace. All you need to do to move on from this beach is show me what love means. For only those whose hearts are filled with love may enter.
He smiles again, but his eyes are still pools of dark scarlet. We three are reflected there as if we belong to him.
As for those who don't know love,
he nods back towards the waves.
You may return to limbo, where eventually, over time, you'll simply fade away. A flash of bile burns the back of my throat. I swallow it down and concentrate. Perhaps his words will fill or release me. I'm slipping away. He wraps a large block of ice in a tea towel and slams it hard against the counter. I jolt, and he waves his arm, the gesture taking in the three of us. All each of you has to do is tell me and the others your story. And to help you, I'll grant you snatches of memories as we go along. He grabs thick chunks of ice and drops them into three tall glasses. Ronnie turns and jabs a finger in my chest.
I was happy before the old woman turned up. I'd passed my school inspection. Everything seemed so real. But even that's fading now.
He pours white rum into the iced glasses and throws in some diced pineapple.
Then, if you were happy, Ronnie, genuinely happy, go back to your spot and stare at the waves. Your memory of the school inspection will come back, but you won't move on from that.
Nikki grabs Ronnie's hand.
Don't go, Ronnie. Stay here,
she pleads. I lower my gaze to the sand. I don't care what any of them do. They can say what they want. I'll stay until the rest of me fades away. Once more the sun sharpens the sky, and the gatekeeper places three cocktails onto the bar. Storytelling is such thirsty work, ladies. Please, take a seat and help yourselves. Ronnie, since you've so many questions, why don't you start? Think of love, and I'll take you back there. Nikki whispers,
It's okay, Ronnie. I'm here.
Chapter 6. Ronnie, the beach.
His knockoff Armani is shit. Who does he think he is? But more importantly, who am I? Where have I been and how the fuck did I die? I've been trying so hard to remember since this asshole turned up, but I can't. All that's present is the waves. Even the memories I had before are gone. And of course, this idiot standing here like some crazy Old Testament Moses guarding the gates of heaven. I have to fight to get in. And not just fight. No, I have to prove that my heart is full of love. What does he want a love story for? 1950. Hello and fuck off. We women aren't swallowing Valium for the nauseous boredom of daytime TV or being chained to a man's kitchen sink anymore. We're perfectly fine on our own. Some of us have careers. Christ, I hope I've got a decent career. I need to work out how to get out of here.
Ronnie, you may go back to the waves and limbo any time you wish. Let them take you. Carry you away.
Are you fucking mad? This man is a psycho. How the hell do I make sense of this? Can't trust him. What if moving on is worse? Much worse than this. And anyway, I like watching the waves and drifting. Don't I? It wasn't so bad.
The gatekeeper smiles again, but his dark eyes remain fixed on mine.
I want to punch him, smash his head against the driftwood wall and laugh at his predicament.
If not the waves, Ronnie, then perhaps you should focus and listen.
He's off his bloody head. I'm not taking any more of this shit. And he stinks of rotten fish, like a decaying Captain Birdseye
dug up from the seabed. Listen, Ronnie. Standing there like he's our saviour, when he's really a prick. Calm down and listen. How dare he talk to me in that tone? And then it surrounds me. Our song. Falling from the stars. Love dust sprinkled skies. The images assault my mind so forcefully that I collapse to the sand. Our first dance. His hand in mine. The taste of his lips. The love in his eyes. Graham. And I want to curl up in his arms. I want more. Not just the same old daily pattern. Not the same old scene. The singles night. The school inspection. There must be more than that. And I'll let myself remember another time. Another place. Tit for tat. And his eyes are exactly where I want them. Focused on me. Adjusting my pencil skirt so that a glint of flesh flashes his way. I comb a hand through my hair and smile up at the stage. He drops the mic for a second time, bungles his words and presses the wrong slide. I laugh, and when the crowd joins in, his face burns crimson. It's so unlike him. Of course, the delegates at the conference haven't witnessed my game plan. It's taken a while to action. For the last few weeks, I'd ignored his calls, played hard to get, too busy, unreachable. Not that there were many to ignore. He wasn't chasing too hard. There'd been no frantic memos stacked high on my desk urging me to contact him, and the calls had tapered off a few days ago. I'd guessed he'd other fish on the hook and didn't have much time to pursue me. The minnow that didn't fall for his charisma, the one that swam free. I'd needed to change that, so I'd scoured brochures searching for his name and found an education conference where he was giving a keynote speech. Luckily for me, the front row still had vacant seats. No one liked the first row. They all preferred to sit near the back. They could snooze there, nap off the boozy lunches. But not me. I wanted to be seen, full on and centre stage. I booked a seat and then went into Liverpool for a killer outfit in the heels, as you do when you're fixed on winning the prize. The applause snaps me back to the present, and I dip down to retrieve my handbag from the floor, allowing my breasts to spill from my sweetheart top. Time to head to the bar. I'll wait there with a few cocktails and a good-looking man. To up the ante until Graham seeks me out, which he will, of course. I throw him a wink as I strut past, and he grins back, snared, like an irritant inside a saltwater oyster. The bar is quiet, except for a few scattered men who obviously saw this as a jolly and couldn't be arsed with the learning part, although they'll make good use of the old boys' club to promote their careers. A lot of whiskey will be served tonight, and drunken promises held to ransom in the morning light. I jostle onto a bar stool and order a long vodka. Near the entrance to the hotel, a piano plays. It doesn't take long for someone to slither beside me. Aye, darling. You here for the conference too? Not an original line, and the darling makes my hands clench. But with his smart suit and good looks, he'll do. Graham won't know he's a caricature that every woman has met before. I slide my smile his way. David, or Davy D, as his friends call him. He capitalises the D out loud as if it's a badge of honour. Is here to network. What a surprise. Over the next 40 minutes, I learn he's the youngest deputy head in England and is on fast track to being a head. Of course, he couldn't have achieved any of it without his young, devoted wife, who supports his every move. He loves her dearly and is so lucky that she's a traditionalist and enjoys being the shadow to his light. He never asks me one question. I don't care. He's only a pawn in the game. But what happens at conference stays in conference, right? He leers. An ostentatious bottle of wine appears on the counter. Its intention is to impress me and open my legs, while his wife sits at home with a nice cup of tea. I chew on my lip to stop from blurting out pig. Instead of spewing out words, he should oink. With his face getting redder from the alcohol, he even looks like one now. A room key swivels in front of my nose. He turns it around to make sure the P for penthouse stands out. Oh, how thrilling. A trip to paradise for little old me. You fancy taking this wine upstairs, darling? We'll be back down in time for the networking event. I'll need to tell him to fuck off. I reapply my lipstick for dramatic pause. His tongue flicks across his lips, and a hand clasps my shoulder. Ah, there you are, Ronnie. I see you got the drinks in. Graham grabs the bottle of wine and ushers me over to the green velvet sofa near the piano, where jazz notes soften the atmosphere. Davy shouts, "Hey!" and steps towards us. Graham smiles. "Oh, hi, Davy. Tell the wife I'm asking after her. Tabitha, isn't it? And congrats on the new baby." Davy stares, mouth open and 50 quid poorer, and trudges back to his seat, big D shriveled between his legs. We sink into the sofa, but once Graham pours the wine, we shake with laughter. "Poor bastard," Graham says. "Poor Tabitha," I reply. The bar becomes louder. People are enjoying pre-dinner drinks and the strengthening of old alliances. Lots of new posts will be made here tonight. None will be advertised until the new term, but they are already done deals. The arse kisses move higher with the right accents and public school connections. When you come from nothing, it's hard to smash through. The word child won't have been mentioned, but budgets and bigger class sizes will bring praise and handshakes. Graham brushes a strand of hair from my face, and his touch reminds me of how close we're sitting. His arm draped along the sofa behind my head feels like it belongs there. How did that happen? When he whispers into my ear, the touch of his breath makes me feel faint. "You hate all this as much as me, Ronnie. So why are you here? Is it for me?" The pianist plays the first notes of Falling from the Skies, and I hold out my hand, the wine masking the vulnerability that's always with me. "Dance with me, Graham." And we do. Just us two on a small starlit square, my head on his shoulder, his arms tight around my waist. When the next song begins, we continue. And it's so calm, so peaceful, the music and us. He closes the door while I sit on the bed. Gorgeous. Great ass. Funny too. We've laughed so much at me turning up and trying to put him off his speech, and the day in the office when he did the same to me. He's charming. But that charm would win others too. Laugh them into bed. Make them feel safe. He walks over and pulls me in for a kiss, and I push him to the floor. He needs to remember me. I need to be different from all the rest. As he laughs and moves to rise, I push him back down. "Stay," I command. His eyes narrow, but he obeys and remains fixed in place. I unzip my pencil skirt, pull it down, step out of it and fold it onto the chair. My fingers linger on each button of my blouse before it's placed on top. Turning towards him in only my heels and underwear, a rush of power pulses within me. I strut towards him and slowly circle his body, He moans, and his hand reaches out. I bat it away and stretch over to the bedside cabinet, take a sip of my drink, and smile. I have him now.
Ronnie,
he pleads. Placing a finger under his chin, I tilt his head towards me and say, I prefer my men naked and kneeling. He winks. I slap him, stare. Then he undresses. How excited he is. Under crisp Egyptian cotton, we're cuddled together in bed, spooning. We've only slept a few hours. I trace his fingertips and kiss them softly, one by one. He gathers me tighter into his arms and whispers,
Ronnie, you're amazing.
I snuggle in deeper. He is too. Everything about him.
I mean, you're so beautiful and smart,
he says. He kisses the back of my neck and I smile, pulling his hands tighter around my waist. I imagine us taking long walks by the sea, laughing in the breeze, a dog running by our sides, chatting in the kitchen while he pours some red wine and the table is set with candlelight, sharing popcorn and beer while we watch an old movie, lying in bed side by side, reading our favourite books. He'd sleep on the left and we'd always kiss goodnight.
But I've just come out of a 10-year marriage and I'm not ready for a relationship.
A shiver chills me, but I hold still, force myself to continue to trace the lines of his palm, gently, not digging my nails in.
Ronnie, I don't want to hurt you. That's why I'm telling you now.
But he'll hurt me. All of them do. I hold on tight and don't show a flicker of emotion.
Ronnie, what I'm trying to say is...
Yeah, it's him, not me. And can he stop using my name in his effort to make it personal? We both know what this is. I turn round to face him. My tone is light and free as he wants himself to be. Graham, don't be daft. It's only a fling, isn't it? As he caresses my breasts and teases my nipples, he continues,
I'm glad we're on the same page, because I won't ever fall in love with you, Ronnie.
Oh, won't he? We'll see about that. I never run from a challenge.